Welcome to the Unblocking Crypto Podcast. This podcast is not financial advice. It's meant for entertainment purposes only. These are just the opinions of a couple of rambling wrecks.
Welcome back to episode number 138 of Unblocking Crypto. Hal, great to see you.
Good to see you, Jason.
You know, I kind of expected this to be a slow week, but there still seems to be a lot of stuff constantly happening every week in crypto. The big news of what last week is there was a rate cut, 50 basis points. First time in 4 years we've had the Fed cut the rates. This is like the third time in recent history that we've seen a 50 basis point rate cut. The other two times were in what, 01 and 07, and the economy crashed afterwards. So hopefully that is not the case this year. And what I also saw that was really interesting, I know we've talked a lot about Polymarket and using that for determining elections. Well, 92% of all the economists predicted the rate cut to be at 25 basis points. 53% of the people on Polymarket predicted it to be 50 basis points. So right now, the crowd is beating these experts around the world.
Well, you know, the experts don't have to put money on the line. They just get to say whatever they want. They're like meteorologists, you know, they keep their job even if they're wrong every time.
Yeah, no, very true. And I mean, the other thing that's, I guess, kind of tied to all this too is the Bank of Japan also decided to keep their rates flat instead of raising their rates. So we're lowering our rates. Bank of Japan is raising their rates. Something doesn't make sense there, but I guess if they're pretty much zero and we're way high, maybe we're going to meet somewhere in the middle.
Yeah, I think it's probably time for the Fed to lower rates. We're basically on the ceiling as high as we could go with the 5 and change Fed funds rate, because we're getting smoked on the interest payments to the federal debt, which is just piling into more debt, which is piling into more interest payments. So it made sense to me to start bringing it down. I think that the unemployment numbers are trash, so they can kind of just manipulate those. And the inflation numbers are also trash, but people can actually feel those. The only people that feel the unemployment rate are those who are unemployed. So I think they can kind of play as many games as they like, but they still don't seem to care too much about interest payments, and they don't seem to care too much about debt. But I think they're trying to land this plane softly, and it's fine with me. I think it's going to have to happen. I can't imagine without a catastrophe that they tank rates back down to like 1 or 2, but get back down into like the 3s or 4s, and hopefully kind of get some steady, logical, reasonable, you know, cost of money thing. It's bullish for Bitcoin because, you know, you lower rates and money flows and velocity comes up. And it seems like every time there's an event where there's a rush to liquidity and everybody sells everything, when everybody goes back to allocating their funds into different assets, a little bit more goes into Bitcoin every time. And so a little bit more is going to go into Bitcoin this time, and that's good for people like me and you, and it's good for people in El Salvador and people in Bhutan and people that have hold Bitcoin. So I think I'll take that. You know, you got a rate cut in about the same time as the Bitcoin price hit a golden cross, which means the short-term 50-day moving average crossed from the bottom up through the 200-day moving average. So that's typically a very bullish, kind of like a swing trade, like a longer-term technical indicator that things are going well. So those are kind of whenever things happen, 2, 3, 4 things happen at the same time, Bitcoin usually is predictable. If things are just kind of kicking along, Bitcoin can surprise you big time. But when you have this many tailwinds, and not to mention just the self-fulfilling prophecy of the fourth quarter after a halving and up timber and all these different things where October is a good month, you know, you're going to have people front running that activity. You know, we just hit a higher low in after this dip down to like 55. So things are pointing up for Bitcoin. Bitcoin typically does things that surprise you and it hurts a lot. So I like, for all I know, we're going to see like a $10,000 wick down, but And you know, when you're bullish Bitcoin and then you see all of these things happening, it's tough not to be even more bullish. I not to to go over the top here, but when you're like, oh yeah, boring week, you know, oh, the big news is the rate cut. I thought you were going to talk about the options being approved by the SEC for IBIT.
Well, so that's the next thing that I had too. And I was like, we should probably talk at least about the rate cut since that happened. I mean, it's exciting to see the SEC actually doing something and approving options trading for BlackRock's ETF. It's maybe bittersweet because now the SEC has done something, but now you still have to have the OCC and the CFTC still need to approve it on their end. It's crazy to me that BlackRock was able to get this approved in 6 months, whereas the Winklevoss twins have been trying for a decade to get this approved as well and still don't have it approved by the SEC. So it kind of goes to show that when you have somebody like a BlackRock who pretty much is an extension of the U.S. government, they can get things done when they need to. And what's kind of crazy too, I don't know if you saw their white paper they just released on Bitcoin. They released this 9-page white paper and why Bitcoin is this unique diversifier against fiscal, monetary, and geopolitical risk factors. And it's, I mean, kind of well done, right? But it's just more of their sales material to their clients to show them why Bitcoin is an important piece of their financial picture moving forward.
Yeah, I love that thesis. A lot of the stuff for Bitcoin to me is just getting people and organizations off of zero. And just being like the unique diversifier to me is a great way to just say, look, allocate 1%, right? If you're like a nation state, like Samson Mao, when he starts, you know, he's like, listen, if you think that there's a 1% chance that Bitcoin succeeds, you should allocate 1% of your sovereign wealth fund to Bitcoin. And so I'm fine with that. And, you know, BlackRock, am I a fan of BlackRock? No, I think those institutions are part of what's destroying everything, but fixes the stuff it touches. Like BlackRock can push the SEC around and they can go from there's no way we're going to get a Bitcoin spot ETF to BlackRock's got Bitcoin spot ETF options approved in like 12 months. So yeah, now am I pulling for BlackRock? No, but it's accelerating things, right? It's like COVID accelerated 10 years worth of stuff, work from home culture, just it accelerated the censorship regime on social media and the platform. And you know, it's and so what BlackRock's doing is just accelerating everything. And is that a good thing or a bad thing? I mean, I think primarily it's a good thing it's not awesome because you've got this acceleration through the institutions and through high net worth people. And you've got like a slower moving older retail boomer population that's still hesitant to buy in. So, you know, they're kind of missing it, whereas maybe their kids would have been able to talk them into it if things went slower. But for me, I've adopted this position where you had enough time to figure out Bitcoin. It's been 15 years. Everybody's known about it since 2017. Anybody who's got, you know, any awareness at all, that's 7 years. If you didn't get into it in 7 years and BlackRock is front running you, then that's your fault, you know? So I'm not, I don't feel sorry for anybody anymore. I'm going with like a tough love approach for them. Like I probably talked to Bitcoin. Everybody I know knows me that they can call me and talk to me about Bitcoin because I will be glad to spend an hour on the phone with them and point them in the right direction. And my phone doesn't ring. So, you know, sympathy's out. So I'm not worried about it. I think that the options approval is going to bring in even more funds from the institutions that are already open to Bitcoin and the spot ETFs. I think that it's going to bring in different institutions that wouldn't otherwise be interested because it brings in more liquidity. It brings in more games to play. You can hedge easier. I think for guys like me that are like, you know, I'm holding a lot of Bitcoin. I kind of at some point I'm going to want to have some quality of life improvements or use the Bitcoin to my advantage instead of just like, yay, I'm holding Bitcoin and happy about it. And so, you know, the covered calls play is available if you've got the Bitcoin spot ETF. So you, yeah, if Bitcoin spikes, then you get, you're forced to sell your Bitcoin at a price, but you get a lot of the upside. But if it's 5% of your stack and you've been collecting premiums for 2 years, yeah, that's just the risk you run. The rest, am I going to be ticked off if Bitcoin shoots up and 95% of my stack is going through the roof and I lost 10% or 5% of the gains on one little piece? You know, no, I'm, you know, eyes wide open. I'm going into this. And if I want to use my, Bitcoin to mine fiat through covered call premiums, then that's a game I'm probably willing to pay or willing to play with the consequences that I'm willing to pay. I will say, I can't imagine selling naked puts on Bitcoin. It's going to happen. People are going to do it and they're going to get their heads knocked off. So, you know, bring it on. Like I said, Bitcoin, if Bitcoin touches it, you know, it's a truth machine. Play the games and you're not going to get bailed out. Like, you're just going to get smashed. So let's smash some folks. I'm not sure if it's going to lead to more volatility or less volatility. Maybe it's more volatility in the short term and less volatility in the long term. I kind of haven't really thought about it too much. I have kind of considered that there's going to be a lot more volatility during the day, during the trading day, because so many people are into like daily expiration options. So I think you'll see a lot of things go up and down daily, but you know, over the course of months, is it more volatile? I don't know. I think it's a big deal. It's not as big of a deal as the ETFs themselves, but it is like a little more jet fuel in the mix, and I'll take it.
Yeah, it'll be interesting when it actually happens, right? I mean, weird that we're waiting on the CFTC instead of the SEC on one of these issues right now.
Yeah, it's true.
That is not the norm. I did see last week that the SEC kind of got blasted by a majority of Congress on what they were doing with how they handled this regulation by enforcement, which is kind of interesting because I think there's another meeting coming up either today or tomorrow that is going to have all five commissioners and sitting in front of Congress and getting blasted. Even I think there is a letter that went out by the House Majority Whip and the chairman of the House Committee of Financial Services to the SEC asking them to clarify airdrops and why the U.S. is really the only country that's blocked from getting them, which has been a huge frustration on my end. I know I've talked about some of those in the past, but said, hey, if you're in the U.S., sorry, you can't get them. So we'll see what happens with all of that. It's kind of a mess. I mean, two of the SEC commissioners, you can probably guess, Hester Peirce and Mark Udida, they slammed the SEC last week too after that whole settlement with Flyfish, which was a high-end restaurant offering NFTs for access, for like a membership access. And the SEC, those two SEC commissioners called it a endless series of misguided and overreaching cases. There is a lot of maybe a conflict going on internally between the SEC commissioners right now, which is, I guess, good and bad to see at the same time, right?
Yeah, I mean, the SEC needs to get their stuff together. That's all there is to it.
There's a Coinbase is still in a lawsuit with the SEC, and the judge just approved the SEC 4 more additional months to get a bunch of documents to help with discovery proceedings. And I think it's like 133,000 documents that they're supposed to be supplying. So, which means that this is now going to be like a February of 25 timeframe, which means that the soonest we might even have some sort of trial for these two is what, mid 25. So a lot of what's going on hinges on the Coinbases of the world and the Krakens of the world going up against the SEC. And that's still about a year away from ever finishing or getting some sort of closure.
Yeah, the SEC has got to get it together. They keep just executing people, and it seems like random people, and a lot of them I've never heard of. So I don't know why they seem to approach this. They have to know that this isn't a comprehensive way to pass regulations. It's just firing at different targets willy-nilly with no real strategy. And I don't know. I don't know that I've paid enough attention to a regulator like this to know if, oh, this is just a common thing. They're just dumb. And they, a lot of times this works and they scare the industry off or the industry just falls into line. But, you know, in this case, you've got a lot of people that are trying to follow the SEC's guidance and it's just not working. And then on the flip side of that, you've got companies like BNY Mellon, who is now got an exemption from the SAB 121 guideline and can now custody Bitcoin for its customers. So not only are you just firing at targets every once in a while, one of your targets doesn't get fired at all and is like, oh, you're exempted. We're not going to execute you for this. You can go ahead and proceed in a way that we said no one should proceed. So it's like directionless regulation. I couldn't imagine trying to be a company that's trying to move forward and build a company in Bitcoin, go to an investor and try to explain the regulatory risk and what that picture looks like and how to say, yeah, we're good. The SEC is not going to mess with us when maybe they do, maybe they don't.
That last week there, one of those guys that was pretty much grilling the SEC was an ex SEC commissioner who now is at Robinhood. And he was kind of describing the whole process that Robinhood has gone through. And they do everything the SEC says, and the SEC says, still, you're doing it wrong, right? It makes no sense on how they're handling this. So I can only imagine a company trying to do more in the crypto space and having to deal with the SEC, who won't tell you what they're thinking. They just say, hey, you owe us money because you did it this way. We didn't tell you could do it one way or the other, but that's not right.
Yeah, I just feel like that over a long enough time period, crypto and Bitcoin are going to win. The right people, you know, attrition matters, you know, as these people move out. And not only that, the more people, I mean, it seems like the lobby groups are getting more and more powerful. You know, you look at the presidential donation blocks and how crypto is putting a ton of money into Trump's campaign. And that stuff matters, you know, it's slowly turning the Titanic around, but you got to start somewhere, and it just seems to only move in our direction slowly. And you can almost feel the people getting squeezed, like the Elizabeth Warrens and, you know, and the SEC, that there's more and more people squeezing them than there used to be. And so 2 years from now, there's going to be even more pressure. So, you know, it's frustrating because, you know, you want things to happen fast. But at the same time, I'm pretty optimistic because things are moving in our direction.
Yeah, I mean, I mentioned we're waiting on the CFTC earlier. I mean, it used to be, it seemed like the CFTC was the one that was kind of pushing the SEC to get more involved or to follow their lead. What's crazy now is the CFTC, we talked about it last week or the week before about Kalshi, which was doing the Poly market alternative based in the US, and the CFTC put a temporary halt on them going live because they're arguing that most Americans think democracy is under attack and that these high stakes betting is going to harm the public. And I don't know if I'm going to disagree that most Americans think democracy is under attack. I don't think this is the reason it gets under attack. Like, censorship is kind of the way I look at this, is one of the reasons we think it's under attack. And the CFTC is trying to censor what people are allowed to do, saying they're not smart enough to put their own money down on what they think is going to happen, right? So, and it's crazy. We talked about it last week. Bloomberg is now using Polymarket data in their decision making because it's some of the most accurate stuff out there.
Yeah, I mean, democracy requires an educated voting base, and so if you have an uneducated voting base because you control the media and it's all one-sided, then you don't really have democracy, even though everybody gets to vote. So if you eliminate things like Polymarket that are a bit of a truth teller, or at least it is, you know, okay, let's just look at the presidential election alone. You have one source of information that tells you kind of what people are thinking, and that's the polls. And yeah, there's 8 or 10 or 12 different polling things, but they're all basically performing the same actions. They're asking similar questions. It's almost the same thing. It's just tweaky between the different polling companies. So why wouldn't you get this very orange to the polling apple way of determining what people are thinking? Because you know, the more pieces, the more data points that you can get, the easier it is to draw trend lines. And I don't know why you'd take it out. I mean, aside from like people putting enough money down that they could, but with voting, it's like, what are you going to do? That you're allowing people to, or super PACs to exist to tip the scales, right? Like just pounding the country with media and negative ads and all these things. So you really think that the some money going into the betting markets is making more of an impact than $2 billion worth of marketing? Like, this is, I think it's almost laughable.
Well, what's crazy is they came out and said that the reason they're trying to ban this is that because they're saying the sources of information that the people absorb are and reflect are opaque and unreliable. And they're talking about like the undisclosed methodologies, bad methodologies, fake polls, pollsters with agenda, inaccurate news, fake news, on and on. And I'm like, well, why you would, I would think you would want something like this to happen, right? Where people have to put their money where their mouth is rather than you're just having somebody put some number up there and it's a random discussion with somebody in a parking lot of who you're going to vote for. Like, this makes way more sense to see what people are really voting on rather than just asking some random people that have no reason to, you don't know if they're going to vote.
Yeah. Well, yeah, tinfoil hat time. If people are actually putting their money on what is going to happen in the election, they might actually figure out a way to be more accurate than the polls that are pretty wildly manipulated, or at least they're super biased, because one team, the red team, doesn't like to answer phone calls and fill out surveys, and the blue team can't wait to do it. So almost every poll is like 55 to 65% blue team responded and 45 to 35% red team. And so there's a huge bias that they have to adjust for in post-production of the poll. And so, maybe Polymarket and money will spur people to like, oh, let's figure out a better way to figure out what the public thinks, or, you know, let's use sabermetrics to be super efficient on targeting certain counties across the country, which typically dictate the country, the way the election goes. But you wouldn't want that if you're a politician, right? Because then it kind of unveils how stupid the entire process is.
So, speaking of politicians, I know we've talked a little bit about some of this stuff in the past, and the whole concept of choke point 2.0 and how certain governments were trying to get rid of certain types of industries. Well, Silvergate, which was one of the big banks that shut down last year, end of last year,
March 2023.
Yeah, so a year and a half ago. They have been going through their bankruptcy proceedings and pretty much just came out, I think, last week that they weren't insolvent. So the only reason that this was shut down was pretty much because of choke point 2.0, and it has on the record testimony to prove it. Even after repaying all their customer deposits, they still had $163 million left to redistribute to shareholders. So it was just kind of crazy that this stuff is still happening. I like to think that at some point it's going to stop. But I mean, even a couple of weeks ago, we talked about some bank in Texas that was having the same issue, right? They were crypto friendly, and the government was not playing very fair with them because banks want to control everything, or the other banks want to control everything. They don't want crypto to have any sort of foot into any of this space.
Yeah, I did read about this. So in that bankruptcy hearing, basically she said, yeah, we were okay, but the Fed had already come in and they said, if we don't curtail the crypto exposure, then they're going to shut us down. So we just decided to shut down instead of revamping our entire business model. And then what happened the next day? A run on Silicon Valley Bank because they had so much crypto exposure. And then the next day, and then $40 billion had to come out through the FDIC, which just means all the bank fees went up for everybody. So, like, thanks a lot, Fed. Appreciate you looking out for us and costing a whole bunch of money just because you don't want banks to have crypto exposure. So, yeah, this is just one of those things where it's like the blue team really needs to show me something. They've done there's talking a little bit. There, you know, I think Kamala said something to the effect of she's not going to stifle innovation in the crypto industry and things like that. But holy cow, man, you like don't have all these black eyes and then do a little bit of lip service. You know, you're going to have to do some real actions in order to kind of change my mind, because, you know, campaign promises are one thing, but you're currently in have influence. Like, I don't know who the president is right now, but Kamala Harris is pretty close to it, and something can be done. So if you're not going to be crypto friendly now, and you're just going to say some things, I'm not going to buy it.
Well, the other big thing that's going on is Samurai Wallet. The founders are on trial in New York right now. And I mean, the long story short of this is pretty much our privacy being put on trial. So if they find these guys guilty, what the U.S. government is saying is that U.S. citizens don't have the right to have privacy. They have to disclose. Everybody has to know what everybody's doing, and they need to be able to track it all, which is kind of the opposite of what this country was founded on. So there's a difference between privacy and anonymity. Right? So I'm interested to see kind of what happens with this. I think there's a lot of crypto companies that are paying attention to this. And after what happened at Telegram in France, like, it's kind of on a downward spiral right now with the government's trying to control everything and want nothing left to chance of what's happening behind the scenes.
Yeah. You know, fortunately, the court system has been pretty friendly as far as ruling on things that make sense. So I hope that continues. I do feel like that there's a bit of a tide shift overall on this stuff, and it's just going to take quite a while for it to really materialize all the way down. But yeah, it's a bummer that, yeah, that you know, you've got this industry that can just improve things, but it has to fight the crappiest, most inefficient, slowest moving, most incompetent organization ever built in the U.S. government. So I guess just wait.
So at the state level, there's some exciting stuff happened too. So Louisiana just came out and said they're now accepting Bitcoin for certain payments inside of their state, which is exciting to see. They're not the first state to do it. There's been a handful of other states that have done it. Some have done it for a little bit of time and then stopped. So it hasn't been super simple for a lot of these states, but it's great to see other states saying, oh yeah, I want to try to get more involved in all this. Most of them, of course, are immediately taking that Bitcoin and selling it to fiat, right? They're not keeping it in their reserves, but that's okay too.
Yeah, you know, just get a taste of it. You know, I think most people that get into Bitcoin bought and sold it, and then over time they regret doing that, and then the next time they buy some, they don't sell it. Just like, you know, a lot of times people get in a little bit and then they get in a lot. And there was a Bitwise posted that one of their clients that, you know, a small client, $100 million AUM, said, yeah, 2.5% Bitcoin allocation, you know, for our fund, let's go. And now they said, let's make it 6%. So, you know, getting from zero to anything is very important. And then after that, even if you go back to zero, it's in your mindset. And if you jump in and jump back out and, oh man, we're up 15%, that's great. And then Bitcoin runs like I hope it does in the next few months, and you're like, oh, we could have tripled our position in dollar terms, and instead we sold, then you're more inclined to jump back in and at least learn a lot more as compared to where you were before. So yeah, getting a taste of it is important. So even if it's a state or a country or a person, it doesn't really matter.
Yeah, and you mentioned Elizabeth Warren earlier in this conversation. There's a big date coming up, October 15th. So John Deaton and Elizabeth Warren are actually set to debate on that date, which is going to be interesting, probably more exciting than some of the presidential debates. And I think, unfortunately, Warren's still like a 97% favorite to win the election on Polymarket, but it will be exciting to see what's being said between those two, because John Deaton has been in the crypto industry for quite some time, and I think he even represented Ripple or XRP back in the day, right? He knows what he's talking about. So it should be fun just to see those two kind of go at it, and I'm more interested in that than I am seeing another presidential debate, that's for sure.
Yeah, I want to see her talk about crypto in front of a person that gets to talk back that knows their stuff. Like, exactly. I don't think she's ever been in that situation. And if she has, maybe it's been in a congressional hearing kind of situation where she only gets 5 minutes and the person can't really speak that much to it. So I'm happy to see how this goes. And I want to see John Deaton in a dynamic situation, talking and bobbing and weaving and absorbing some blows and criticisms and things too. So debates are good.
Yeah,
there's a reason that it's been a staple in politics for so long.
So moving on to some of the stuff in the world, I did see that Canada has canceled their plans for a CDBC. So they were calling it kind of the digital loomie. They spent about 5 years of research on it and now have pulled the plug, which is probably a great story to hear. And then the Europe has their Euro Coinvertible, EURCV stablecoin, that SG Forge has done, which they're part of a French financial services firm. They are taking the stablecoin to Solana, and it has historically always been on Ethereum, but they only had 28 holders and 154 lifetime transactions. Only issued about 33 million of the stablecoin, and so they're thinking that the problem has been Solana or Ethereum, and that moving to Solana will make things easier. But the crazy part is Ethereum has had gas fees in the low pennies as well lately. So I don't see why it's an Ethereum problem, but I think they're on a last gasp to try to get something moving one way or the other.
Yeah, I'm glad to hear Canada's just wasting a little bit of money and not actually becoming more tyrannical. So I've kind of adopted this position of like, oh, let governments waste money. Like I used to get really upset about like the grift, you know, like somebody's brother-in-law was probably paid several million dollars to do something in that CBDC thing, you know, or some political donors that support some of the people that passed the legislation, you know, they got their piece of that, you know, chunk. But at least they didn't do something that sucks. They just wasted money, right? I'm like, now that I'm into Bitcoin, I'm like, well, they're just going to print more money anyway. I care so much less. So it's like, whatever. At least they didn't erode more freedoms.
Yeah, I was also saw that the Supreme Court of India, so they have a YouTube channel, which is kind of interesting, right? They apparently stream some of the important hearings on there. Well, they got hacked. And whoever hacked them showed a bunch of Ripple promoting videos and all this kind of stuff. So that, I think, has been taken down, of course. But it was just funny that people are hacking them and promoting Ripple. So as I think the big thing too for me is, just because you see it in one location doesn't mean that it's real. So go verify whatever that is in multiple locations, whether it's the Supreme Court of India or Twitter in general. Twitter will usually announce whether something's real or fake much quicker than anybody else.
Yeah, I mean, the only thing unhackable is the United States voting machines. So if it's not that, then you really have to have two or three different points of verification in order to make sure it's not, you know, somebody stealing passwords or hacking through a system. So yeah, I think like everything, and not only that, man, even when you see a video now and it looks like somebody's talking, it's like, don't know if this is AI or not. So
yeah,
you know, like almost everything is not believable.
So speaking of hacks, BingX, which is a crypto exchange, was just hacked for about $43 million. I mean, I feel like we talk about this, if not weekly, every other week, that there's another exchange getting hacked. And don't keep your money on exchanges, because that's how you lose it. So put it in a cold wallet. Learn about cold wallets. Don't rely on any of these other companies out there, because they're literally the most likely to get hacked just because they're holding so much of stuff. Now, it sounds like $43 million for them is not a ton. So it's not going to be the same thing that's going on with YZRX, right? So YZRX was that exchange in India that got hacked and has been a complete cluster. They have recently blamed their custodian for the hack, and their custodian came out and rejected it. And then they blamed that it was Binance and that they were owned by Binance, and it's Binance's fault. So if you want issue, if it's a problem, go back to Binance. And Binance came back and said, we have never before, during, or after the event had any ownership of this exchange. So it's just turning into a complete disaster with exchanges in general over there.
Yeah, I mean, I think that wallet self-custody is pretty important, because like you just have no idea if these people that are putting together these exchanges are focused on security, like, or are they a marketing company, and are they a sales company that's just trying to go convince people to buy on their exchange so they can make money? And then, oh, by the way, we got to just store it. Let's go. You know, like, how much emphasis did they put on security? So you don't have to do the research and figure out, oh, what's the most secure exchange? You can just put it on a hardware wallet, and then you don't have to worry about it.
Yeah, and Germany actually just shut down 47 crypto exchanges, some of which have been open since 2012, which is quite a while at this point from an exchange perspective. Their thought was that it had a lack of KYC and apparently some possible money laundering going on with all these exchanges. So they're, I mean, it's been no secret they've not been a fan of crypto selling all their Bitcoin. They went from what, the third largest holder, to owning nothing. So they are definitely not staying friendly to crypto right now. And it'll be interesting to see what happens long-term from all that too.
Yeah. I mean, you know, Germany, Weimar Republic and everything else, like, it's not like they've got this awesome history of being aware of these things. I mean, I don't understand why a country wouldn't stop and think about this, bring in some people and try to figure out if it's like, hey, yeah, I feel like we should be against this, but maybe we ought to at least just be kind of neutral or mild. I don't understand why the countries would go in and be like, you know, other countries are going to do this. We don't need to do it. I don't know if they just don't understand how easy it is to operate in a different country. I mean, literally, you just need an internet connection. So, like, are you really giving up on this? It doesn't, I don't get it.
I think maybe one of the reasons they did it is it sounds like their second largest bank in Germany, DZ Bank, just announced that they're going to offer 700 cooperative banks access to crypto, which would enable kind of retail access too. So it's, instead of exchanges, it's got to go through the banks, right?
Right. And so because the banks are they're feeding the pockets of the politicians. So
yeah.
So they're not anti-crypto. They're anti-crypto going in through new channels that don't currently exist and lobby politicians.
Yeah, so it'll be interesting to see what happens with, I mean, I think they connect the first banks at the end, near the end of this year type of thing. But what does that mean? Can you actually trade your crypto out of your bank's wallet into your own wallet? Or is it going to be similar to the ETFs where you can buy it there, but if you want it back, you have to sell it back to the bank channels, and they're going to take their taxes and fees and all kind of that kind of stuff too. So we'll see what happens. It's not pretty right now.
No, we'll see.
So, and this is another theme that I feel like we're talking about every week. MicroStrategy bought some more Bitcoin. I think they planned on raising 700 million and that changed to a billion. So they bought another 300 million extra of Bitcoin, but it never stops with them. So I don't know when it ever will stop with them at this point either.
And he said he's going to never stop buying because it's never going to stop going up. I can't imagine that he's the only guy doing this for very long. The numbers that he's stacking up are getting crazy. I think he's got like $5 billion debt that he's purchased Bitcoin with. And I think he's stacks like 15 plus billion dollars worth of Bitcoin. So if you're somebody else, are you not paying attention to this? Like you're a company, I mean, if you're in the S&P 500, MicroStrategy is like somewhere in the 300s as far as the S&P 500 goes, the size of the company. He's not in the S&P 500. But if MicroStrategy gets into the S&P 500 and all those passive flows from index ETFs starts coming into MicroStrategy, then he's going to start buying Bitcoin without issuing convertible notes and bonds and debt. So like, heads up, he's got a 252,000 Bitcoin head start on you. Like, maybe time to think about getting some exposure.
And even if other companies wanted to do that, there's not many. I mean, you can't have multiple do that. I mean, it's not going to be possible. So no. it'll be interesting to see if anybody actually makes a decision to try to keep up with him.
No, and there's not a lot of companies that have the situation they're in where the founder has so much influence that he's dynamic, that he's able, you know, that there's a lot of intricacies that go into MicroStrategy being able to do this. But anybody could be like, hey guys, let's put 2% of our corporate treasury into Bitcoin.
Yeah.
Okay. Click, 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 done. I feel like that's when MicroStrategy first did it, it would be very difficult. But now it's like, oh, okay, well, I'll call my guy. We'll get BlackRock's Bitcoin ETF and we'll start buying it in some algorithm so that we don't, you know, change the price. I don't know why that you don't hear more of that.
So I think one thing that I forgot to talk about when we were talking about U.S. politics, Trump was in New York City in a crypto pub here recently, and he ended up using Bitcoin to buy some burgers. So I think it's one of the first transactions that a political candidate has ever made with Bitcoin. So I think there's a ton of people that are really excited about it. He did it on the Lightning Network, and of course he had some help to do that. But it is exciting to see that kind of stuff happen from a very high level.
Yeah, I mean, I got a phone call that day from a guy who's older than 70 to make sure that I was aware that Trump was buying or spending Bitcoin. And so, yeah, like he spent like $1,000 on burgers and Coke, Diet Cokes and stuff like that, yeah. Which I think is great, man. Once people realize like, oh, I mean, if this guy can do it, like if Trump can spend and my 7-year-old can spend Bitcoin buying drinks, I think we're kind of there. You know, the Lightning Network needs to be able to handle the volume and, you know, there's scaling issues and things like that. But you really need the store of value narrative to lock in before before it's a money where you're transacting and it's a medium of exchange. So this sort of thing really helps that store of value narrative grow as people are like, oh, maybe Bitcoin is valuable. It just puts it on people's radar better. So I like it. I think PubKey, after seeing that, they got a lot of 1-star reviews that came through on Yelp and other things for people that have never been there. So I think there is a bit of a lightning rod when one team comes into your establishment, but I think it's necessary. Again, it seems early to have a presidential candidate spending in Bitcoin. That's, you know, it just there. You don't get to pick when it comes to like innovation and progress. You don't get to pick which areas of it go fast and which areas go slow. This seems to be one of the areas that's going fast. So
yep.
I'll take it.
So kind of another thing that with Bitcoin that was cool that I saw, the Winklevoss's twins, their dad donated $4 million in Bitcoin to a college that he attended in the 60s, Grove City College. It is now the first Bitcoin gift that a college has received, which is kind of cool. A little fun. I think the plan is to fund new business programs. And the reason he did it, he said that's the place where he first learned about Austrian economics and developed his interest in sound money, which he apparently passed on to his kids because they are pretty big into crypto as well. So it's cool to see. And I'm hoping that the future of crypto in general will see more of donations to the right organizations. I think there's a lot of colleges that are a little crazy lately with everything that's happening. So yeah, cool. Hopefully more of that will happen.
Yeah, I saw that. I think if it's one of those things that I'm not a very philosophical Bitcoiner, but if Bitcoin does go nuts and the people with the money are now people who are sound money minded, then you could flip a lot of things. Like if more money flowed into schools that are teaching Austrian economics, then more kids would learn Austrian economics. And then maybe you'd have a more normal outlook on the economy and how things are supposed to work. And so Bitcoin, you know, do I think Bitcoin changes the world? I don't know that I'm one of those guys, but stuff like this, you know, if I'm willing to say, oh, you know,
El Salvador, sure,
exactly, like, oh yeah, it's El Salvador, it's just one little step in, you know, it's like one country, right? So it would be, it's just a matter of time before the next country does it and all those other things. Well, it's the same thing with colleges. Okay, well, it's just one college, it's one donation to a college that's teaching Austrian economics that's getting rewarded with a Bitcoin donation. Okay, well, what's the next one, right? And how long is it before it's Kellogg and Wharton and every top school in America? So I'm all for it. That's a good thing.
So I know we've talked a lot about decentralized physical infrastructure type of projects in the past. There was another one that was kind of interesting, decentralized storage called, their protocol is called Walrus on Sui. And what we just saw was Decrypt, which Decrypt is probably one of the top three or four crypto websites that keeps a bunch of news articles and videos and photos. Well, one of the problems you have with just the internet in general is a lot of the stuff links other places and you get kind of link rot. And so a third of all these links don't work. Well, Decrypt is actually moving over to Sui's Walrus protocol to create this tamper-proof record of all their content. So it's kind of cool to see something like that happening, and just another use case for a lot of this decentralized physical infrastructure type of projects moving forward too.
Yeah, like that's, give it to me, right? It makes things better, I'm in.
Saga Labs just unveiled the details for their next phone, the Solana phone. They're calling it Seeker. I think there's already been like 100,000 of them that have been pre-sold, but this, when it, the last one that came out did not actually sell very well until all of a sudden Bonk decided to airdrop some tokens to everybody with those phones. And then this $600 phone started going for thousands of dollars per phone on eBay, like $4,000 or $5,000 at one point. So there sounds like there's going to be some more airdrops to come, or Genesis tokens with this phone. They're going to make it a lot better than the last one. The last one was pretty low end apparently, and this one's going to be a lot more crypto centric. So interesting to see, and see what happens in a year or so when it comes rolling out, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, like, that's pretty much the way it's supposed to work. You know, you roll out a little beta test and see how it goes and see what works and what doesn't work. And then when the next one comes around, you do a better job. So we'll see how it goes.
Yeah. And then Base had 4.5 million transactions on Saturday, which is just blowing out all the other optimistic rollout networks. So it's pretty freaking exciting to see that Base is doing well and set new records and all that kind of stuff. So.
Yep. I'm purposely not spending much time paying attention to that. It's like too much stuff. I mean, I don't want to get overloaded. So I'm just letting that one happen, and I'm not really focused on it.
Yeah. I think the big thing to me was Coinbase is investing in that optimistic rollout space, and it's doing well and actually outperforming everybody else. And 4.5 million transactions in a day is a lot.
Yes. So.
That's pretty cool to see. Chainkey Bitcoin, CKBTC, is a non-custodial Bitcoin on CP, Internet Computer. And it's actually going to be bridged to Cosmos using their Osmosis, the decentralized exchange that they have. So this is kind of the first time that a proven, secure, non-custodial Bitcoin is going to be coming to the Cosmos ecosystem. So I know you don't like to have it outside the Bitcoin network, but the more that Bitcoin can interact with other exchanges or other chains and protocols, I think the better everything will be in the long term. So that's exciting to see too.
No, like if other protocols are able to interact with Bitcoin, and it would help accelerate the ability to spend Bitcoin easily, right? Like that's going to be the challenge, is how do you do 4.5 million transactions in a day on Bitcoin, and how do you make it easy so that you know the 50th percentile person can do it? So if it's on another protocol, you got to port it over and put, I mean, from a user standpoint, all you do is put it in a wallet, and the background will do all the coming off of the Bitcoin network going onto this or whatever. So I'm not opposed to it. I think there's other ways to do it. I mean, I like the Lightning Network. I actually, Strike posted something in months ago that was talking about, you know, asking about feedback and ways to improve. And I was like, because when I was in El Salvador, one of the problems I had was my Strike balance was visible all the time. Like if I did a transaction, I kind of had to keep my thumb over the balance. And, you know, I transferred some out, but I still, like, you know, I was on vacation. I didn't, $500 to $1,000 worth of money on my phone. And when I bought a $35, you know, bar tab, I didn't want that person knowing that I had $900 in my wallet. Like, that's not great. And so, and I'm obviously a tourist, not a great position to be in. And so a couple of days ago, they posted, they replied back to that comment on X and was like, now we can go private. Like you just basically touch a button and, you know, you, instead of seeing your balance, it's just dots. So, you know, the good thing about crypto, Bitcoin, you know, layer twos, altcoins, the protocols that are using Bitcoin is like, it's pretty nimble. You know, you're like, oh, we can make an improvement, make an improvement. And I think that's why I feel like we're on the winning side of things is not only is if you pick your favorite crypto project and it's making changes and moves and doing all these things to improve, also multiple other crypto projects are doing something similar and they're making improvements and making changes to get better. So, you know, you're advancing the ball very fast and, you know, everybody's paying attention to everyone else. So if they do something that works, it gets adopted by the other protocols and things move forward and the stuff that doesn't work blows up and fails. And the stuff that does work moves on and advances. So to me, that's it. I'm fine with it. Like I'm done. I'm not the guy that's going to yell at everybody for not using Bitcoin exactly the way I do. I think it's dumb. I think if you did it that way, then it would just be slow and monolithic and it doesn't work. So if we're in an innovation curve, you can't tell people how to innovate. So I say, go for it. Cool.
Yeah, I mean, you look at outside of Bitcoin and maybe Ethereum, pretty much everything else is less than 10 years old, right? So this is still very early on, and a lot of it's probably less than 5 years old for a lot of these projects too. So the amount of innovation that is happening and is still yet to happen is a ton. So this is still very early in the entire roadmap of what's going to happen. And I mean, Amazon struggled a ton at the very beginning, right? And now they're huge. Microsoft is coming the same way, right? So don't expect for them to become this huge behemoth right out the gate. And they have to continue to innovate and try new things and see what needs to happen and what everybody's going to want to happen moving forward. So yeah, makes sense.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, the Lightning Network is one kid's idea on how to prove Peter Schiff wrong that you can buy a coffee with Bitcoin. And now it's kind of grown into what it is. It doesn't mean it's the best way to do it. and it's just, you've got a little bit of momentum there and you got some time behind you. I think it's maybe 6 years old, somewhere around there. Like it's brand new, right? And it's not just 6 years old. It's 6 years old and it's not following behind anybody else. So the next company that comes through is going to have some of the road paved. And then it's going to branch off and it's going to go into, you know, into the road less traveled and it's going to get clunky and tough and they're going to find ways to solve problems that they don't know exist. And it's like, you got to just try stuff, do stuff. And, you know, in this next wave, a lot of people are going to try a lot of stuff and some of it's going to work and some of it's going to blow up and some people are going to lose money and some people are going to make money. And it's like, it's just the way it is. And I think the thing that you can depend on is if you hold your Bitcoin, it's going to be worth more buying power on the other side of this than it is right now.
Yeah, I mean, kind of to that point, I mean, you look at BitTensor, which is the largest AI token by market cap. They are just now adding smart contracts and EVM compatibility so that they can work with Ethereum, right? So to be the largest AI contract and still not work with Ethereum, that's a little crazy to me, right? So there's a lot more coming and a lot more happening. And I think everyone's going to win this.
Yeah. I mean, and you know, you're going to have your web vans and your, you know, pets.com or whatever that didn't make it. So, but you got to go. Like, you can't not do it. That's the only option that doesn't exist. So, you know, a lot of people they're happy to spend their time developing this stuff because the rewards are so great. And people like me and you can pick different horses that we like and try to help them. I mean, this, I dig it. Like, you don't see things like this very often, you know, in our lifetime. It's just here and there. I think that is one of the reasons why everybody likes all these derivatives and things, because it's new and it's not just the same plugging along in kind of a linear fashion. So to be anti any of this stuff is, to me, it's a mistake. Should people hold Bitcoin? Yeah. I don't want to see people get hurt, but I'm not going to stop them. Right. I mean, geez, it's not like we're like, you know what? These covered wagons, they're probably not going to make it to California. Probably should stay in St. Louis. Like, you know, you might die. It's like, yeah, okay, well, people are willing to go and brave it, and they know the risks, or at least they know that there is a risk, and they don't, or there's so many risks they don't even know that what they all are, and they're not quantifiable. And it doesn't matter. They're still going, right? There's some people just have that DNA. So let it roll.
Another thing, and this is probably my last thing that I had on my end, but I saw this and thought it was really interesting. We've talked about real world assets in the past. So Plume Network is planning to tokenize about $1.25 billion worth of real world assets by the end of this year. And it will allow the token holders to earn a yield on a bunch of different assets. Some of those include mineral rights, solar farms, and Medicaid claims. And their plan is to get to about $3 billion. But the cool part about that is a lot of those things I wouldn't really have even thought about, but especially like with the Medicaid claims, how much that would increase the liquidity for a lot of these companies because it takes so long to pay out Medicaid claims. So it's just a really cool technology that is allowing all this stuff to make it easier for companies to do business and have a cash flow of some sort more than what they have. And then give an advantage to people that want to hold on to these real world assets as well, right? It's crazy all the stuff that's happening right now, and we're just scratching the surface still.
Yeah, and so I'm not an expert in this by any stretch, but if you tokenize, let's just say the Medicare claims, then you can create a secondary market for the tokenized Medicare claims so that you don't have to wait for that cash to settle. You could, exactly. you can buy and sell those claims at a discount or a premium based on what you need to do in order to, you know, generate cash and stay solvent as a hospital or a facility or whatever. So that's valuable. It may be super difficult for hospitals and medical facilities in that industry to get their head around it, but man, you know, like sometimes these medical bills and stuff, I mean, it takes a year for the bill to come into the end user, to the patient. And then the insurance is behind that. So yeah, if you could, you know, there's a lot of companies that step in the middle on stuff like this, and they charge 1% per month, and they basically buy the receivables and they pay the cash and then go after the claimant and pull the cash in and make money on the spread. So you could basically neutralize that market because the provider can determine what they're willing to sacrifice in order to effectively sell that receivable as a tokenized real world asset. So that, yeah, I get it. I think, I don't know how long it'll take a hospital or like a medical organization to get it, but there'd be huge value in that because, you know, velocity of money is important. Cash flow is huge for a business. So yeah, there's value there for sure.
What else were you thinking that I missed or you wanted to talk about?
Man, I one thing that's just, I would say it's crypto adjacent. I was running early, man. Me and my 12-year-old and his buddy were early to a youth bowling league on Saturday, and there's a car show. And I'm like, man, we got like 30 minutes. I don't want to sit at this bowling alley and wait. Let's roll into this car show and see what they got. And man, going through all these cars, these like 1968 Corvettes and just cool stuff, man. Like even like 1929 Ford trucks that are made of wood. Like, but I was like, I ran into a guy that I knew or that knew me, and we were talking, and he had a car there, and I'm like, man, these cars look so much cooler than the cars today. I'm like, back when it was like, we power and speed, that's what we want. These are cool cars. And oh, by the way, you can replace all the parts and interchange them and do all these customizations, and you can do them yourself. And everybody, like, you bought a car, it's yours. It's like a piece of you. And now it's like, they're all kind of like plasticky, you know, you buy them. Which SUV do you want? Like, there's three or four different brands. They all look the same. There's no real, like, they're all focused on fuel efficiency. And I'm like, man, the post 1971 car industry and the pre 1971 car industry are so different. Like, there was some momentum through the 70s that got you there, but man, it there's just none of that left. Like, there's just like, what's cool now, like what makes a splash is like Tesla, right? Because it's just this totally new thing. But it's not like there's you don't hear anybody focused on what the new body style of the sports car is going to be. Like, it's so crappy compared to the way it used to be. And so it's like, man, this Fiat, this inflationary stuff sucks. And one of the old Mustangs, man, is like a 1970 Mustang. They had the original window sticker. It was like $4,672 for the Mustang. And it was like, I mean, it was V8. It wasn't the lower end Mustang. I'm like, man, this Fiat stuff sucks. It's like a culture sponge. It just sucks the life out of everything. And it happens at 2% per year. So you don't really feel it until you go to a freaking car show and you're like, every one of these cars is cooler than every car on a lot today. Like, this sucks.
Well, if you really want to go down a rabbit hole, you mentioned 1971. There's a website called WTF Happened in 1971 that pretty much talks about when we decoupled from gold, and all the charts on there are almost depressing to see what happened, right? It's just like, really? Like, okay, there's so much data here. It all points to the same conclusion, and it's just crazy. So
But going to the website and looking at all those charts across all those different things, it's like, oh man, this is something. And then you go to a car show and you're like, look at the lines on this car. Look at how like cool this looks. You know, like this is sleek and just like, even my these 12-year-old kids could tell. And so we left, you know, so both of them are like 4 years away from driving. So they're kind of talking about what kind of car they want or this or that or blah, blah, blah. And so like my son doesn't pick up anything I lay down. Like, he doesn't do it. Like, it just, he's one of those guys. And he's like, I'm listening to him talk to his buddy in the backseat. He's like, I want a car that like looks cool. It's like, I don't care about fuel efficiency. I'm like, all right, yeah. we're making progress on this guy a little bit somewhere. Like, so yeah, man, it's tough to find a car that looks cool. Like, they just suck the life out of that. So yeah, so that's my cultural tidbit to end on.
Awesome. Well, we have definitely probably gone over our estimated time we were hoping for. So as always, crypto kept us busy this week, and I'm be interested to see what happens next week, especially with the SEC commissioners all getting grilled in the next day or two. That's going to be intriguing to see what comes out of that, if anything.
Yeah, should be another boring week.
Exactly. Awesome. Well, how great chat with you. We'll talk to you next week.
All right. Thanks, Jason.
If all of these crypto conversations leave you with more questions and you're looking for answers, I've created a product that dives into most of those answers, including why crypto, how to set up a cold wallet, and some of the more advanced strategies for dealing with crypto. Check the link in the notes below and hope to see you there.